Hello and welcome to Vikings Territory Breakdown. I'm here with Mark Craig from the Star Tribune. Appropriately wearing black today. He's a longtime writer and coverer of the Vikings and the NFL. And we're here to break down that game. What a game. The Vikings, just like every game they played this year, has been a nail biter. And this one came down on the right side for us. In the white shirts, not those in the black shirts.
Oh, I told you, I had a feeling all week that they were going to win, right?
You did not. If anybody wants to go back to prove it, go back in our podcast from last week and you hear Mark predicted a loss, even though he kind of covered himself a little bit. But I said that they were going to win, and this time I was right. 2 weeks ago, you got the Chargers game right, and I got it wrong. So that's just how it goes, right? I mean, it was – too script in a lot of ways for the way the Vikings have played this year, but there's a lot of different things, and we're going to talk about them as we go through. But Mark, what are your overall impressions of that game on Sunday?
I'm just impressed with how Kirk's playing. I mean, and we're going to have to live with this. This is the new style of going for it. There were a lot of cases, or a handful of situations there that they could have gotten the interception. The interception wouldn't have been overturned. So I think Vikings fans kind of need to live with this, because I think this is the way they have to win. And Kirk has to be on board with this, and Zim's on board with it. Kubiak maybe being a little more aggressive. You've got to push the ball down the field to not only Jefferson, but Thielen. This is how you're going to win. But there's going to be a game at some point. You know, hopefully it's not Detroit, where there's a key interception and they lose the game. You know, that comes with how you play. It's just right now that Kirk's been lucky that they haven't intercepted the ball in some cases, and he's been fortunate. That one that was overturned, you know, I think Jefferson got his hand on it at the last minute. Thielen actually went up on that one pass or one deep ball where he's playing defensive back basically and breaking up the pass. So I like the way that Kirk's playing. I feel this is Kirk's team now. You know, we've talked for so long that it's Dalvin Cook's team. That's not to say Dalvin Cook's not important. It just means that they're paying this guy to play this way, and he's stepping up, and this is his team, and this is how you're going to have to win. And I was very impressed with how he played, especially with Aaron Rodgers, you know, breathing down his neck in that second half, you know, ended up almost throwing for 400 yards.
Yeah, the word balance comes to mind. But, you know, as I was watching the game, I take notes and, you know, things that I see. And I had written this is what we've been waiting for Kirk to take some deep shots and to take some chances downfield and let his star players make some plays. And all of a sudden I said, is Kirk going downfield too much? Because he threw double coverage more
than one. That's what people are going to say. That's what people are going to say. As soon as it gets accepted, they're going to be, why did he throw the ball? You got to live with it. And I'd say, you know, he played that way against the Chargers. They threw the ball. Not as many times as this time, but you know, they went two games where they sort of played it from the fetal position. And Kirk, you know, against the Cowboys, that third down performance when they went 0-for-12, they went 1-for-13 and 0-for-12 on their last 12 attempts. That was playing in the fetal position. You know, then they lose to Baltimore. You know, it's the same. It's that same thing where you only play so many games a year, and you just can't play just with you're just so afraid, you know, not to lose. You got to play to win, and he's done that for 2 weeks in a row.
They had the interesting comments after the game, Zimmer and Cousins, and at least maybe not after the game or since the game, where Cousins was kind of talking like, you know, that note I wrote. He goes, well, you know, he took some chances down there, and he wasn't quite so sure, and he was kind of moving back to the fetal position with his comments. And here comes Zimmer saying, that's the way I want him to play, and if he makes an interception, so be it. I'd like to see if that would have been Zimmer's comment if that last interception wasn't overturned and the game ended on that point. However, are they showing their hand now as who they are? And now we know why. You know, I thought coming in, or so far this season, it's been a combination of the three you know, being conservative. Zimmer wants to play his ball control game, and Clint Kubiak is trying to learn how to call a game and is a little more conservative, and Kirk is certainly conservative. It looks like now, if we're to trust these quotes, that it's Kirk that's a little reticent to go down.
Yeah, no, I don't I really don't put any weight in what Kirk says. I put the weight on how he plays. He played with a lot more aggression. You know, it's Kirk's a pleaser. He wants to please everybody. If you ask him a certain question, he's, you know, he's also what do you call himself, methodical or something, when he was asked, you know, 2 weeks ago. Kirk is always processing and trying to figure out what's the right thing to say, what's the right way to act. And what I like is, you know, between the lines, when it wasn't, you know, with him thinking about how to project the perfect image or say the perfect thing or avoid saying the wrong thing, he played in a way that they need him to play, and that's what they're paying him for. And, you know, frankly, this year, you know, they need more wins, but he's earning his money this year, I think. And that was kind of a knock. It's always been, you know, Kirk Cousins doesn't get mentioned without being Kirk Cousins, comma, the guy who makes $33 million. It's time to start saying Kirk Cousins, who, if they keep winning, can do something special this year. And if they get in the playoffs and they're high up and that's the reason because of it, you know, he's in the discussion. Right now, it's kind of a wide open discussion for MVP or wide open for the playoffs. I mean, it's you pick the Titans as the best team in the league and they get beat by the worst, you know, one of the worst teams in the league, the Texans. So it's right now, everything's kind of wide open. And I love the fact that the Vikings are going for it, you know, really, you know, going for it in a way they are. The last 2 weeks have gone for it.
It's still strange, though, because it looks like a switch has been flipped here, you know, with their mentality towards the game. And maybe Zimmer's seeing the fact that, hey, you know, a team that can play, put up points and can go downfield and keep a guy like Rodgers off the field, who demonstrated he was going to score every time he got his hands on the ball in the second half. You know, maybe that it can't be total ball control, and he's seeing the light a little bit too. You think or not?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think so, but it's not like he's been around a long time. He knows that there's a balance to this, and if you look at, you know, the numbers, you know, it's not. I mean, Dalvin Cook in the first half only had, you know, a limited amount of touches, but when it came out in the second half, you know, it was Dalvin Cook on that first drive of the second half, touched the ball seven times for 40 yards. They go down 70-some yards, and they score. So, you know, Kirk and Jefferson and Thielen, they got all the talk, but it's not like Dalvin had a bad game. So I wouldn't, like, say that Zimmer's all of a sudden Air Coryell, Air Zimmer. It's like, you know, it's like there is still – yeah, there's still this, you know, it's like – it's so hard, like, when you talk about stuff like this, because it's either here or there. There's never kind of any blending in of football. And that's, you know, I think Zimmer realizes he needs his quarterback to really have the guts in certain situations, but he also realizes that, you know, Dalvin Cook is still a great player, is a tremendous player, great player. And between the two of them, and if they can piece together everything on defense, like they have in the past 2 weeks, then do something.
I wish I'd have seen a Kirk in the locker room afterwards with a big fat cigar in his mouth, his shirt off, and just sitting there in a very aggressive position and just saying, yeah, we put it to him. You know, 'cause I want this guy to get confidence. I mean, that quote to me says, okay, that was great. I kind of dodged a bullet there. I'm not sure if I want to do it again. But I suppose if I have to, I will. You know, I would love to see him.
You know, to me, the confidence came in the 120 minutes of football in Los Angeles in Sunday. I mean, that was a confident player. And it's also come at the end. I mean, I'm losing track of all the different times they've come back to either win or put themselves in the position to win. It's been all year. So, there's been a confident player at the end of almost every game where they've needed, you know, to put the kicker in position to win, or Cincinnati where they tie it and they lose in overtime. He's not lacking confidence on the field right now.
No, that's a very good point. And you're right. He did not back down. He went back out there, even if every drive didn't go his way, where it did for the Packers in the second half. He came out there and just kept firing. And they got the last drive, they got the 5-yard penalty right out of the gate for 12 men on the field. And then he throws into double coverage, and I went, oh my God. Now, that was so Vikings. That game should have ended right there if it was Minnesota as usual. That's what we were expecting. That's how it goes. But it didn't. And he got a second chance, and he went down there and put the heck of a drive together, all three of them. I was impressed. But it was fun to watch.
Now, okay, so
boot on the
Joe, road. So now I've been here 22 years. You know, I'm not one of you yet. You know, you got to be here a little bit longer than 22 years. But listen, the first thing I thought when they won that game,
I know what you're going to say.
The adopted Minnesotan in me said, "Boy, this is going to make Detroit and loss at Detroit look really bad."
Yeah, you're definitely.
Everybody's clicking off right now.
We all thought it, but you said it. Damn it. Anyway, I got to move on just a little bit because I do want to, Kirk deserves, he's the a topic, and he deserves it. But another guy that got it is Justin Jefferson. And I sent this to you, and I know you're going to think I'm nuts, but just-in-time production, if you know that as a manufacturing term, let me define it for you. Just-in-time production minimizes time, labor, and materials in a manufacturing process by only producing goods as needed. Includes cross-training of employees to work on multiple tasks. Justin Jefferson in the backfield. What rain ratio? We just got just-in-time production. So I'm just throwing that out there to get that
going. What the hell are you talking about?
Just-in-time production. It's a process where they would just get your materials just in time. You'd have turn it in, produce it, and send it out the door. It was years ago that this came out. And now
have you copyrighted this? Are you copyrighting? Someone's stealing your idea right now.
And they probably are. If it's got legs, but it's when I was doing this show with Joe Johnson, I would always come up with these things, and he loved it. So you are obviously not as impressed, but that's okay. What a day Justin Jefferson
had. Got to monetize it, Joe. Monetize it.
Okay, yeah, there you go. I suppose you're going to be wanting, half of
I want to cut. Yeah, I want to cut.
That's about the truth. Jefferson did what we've been asking for all season. He got open knee. He made plays in traffic. He that last touchdown that he scored, that second one that in which he was down the corner, it was a great pass by Cousins. But when I watched on replay, I replayed the game last night, and he made a twist of his body after he did a little nudge, a little push off just for a position. He turned back to the ball and just made a hell of a catch right there in the corner of the front of the end zone. Shows exactly.
So it's okay for him to push off, but not Drew Pearson.
They both did. I mean, when I saw the replay on it, the other guy had his hands too, and the ref was right there. He looked at them both.
But that's why. This is why. To me, because of the combination between Cousins and Jefferson is so good now, because that throw, not only was that a good throw, but that's an all-out, that's a zero blitz. They're coming after Kirk, and he's throwing it as he's going back and lobbing it to the perfect spot. I mean, Kirk Cousins' arm, no one's ever questioned his arm strength and his arm talent. It's always been, can he get his brain out of the way to play the game, not worry about the game? And I think he knows, and Adam Thielen has wild catches too. I mean, it's like – we talk more about Justin Jefferson because they're more flamboyant, but Adam Thielen catches balls in tight windows too. So he's he's in tune with these guys, and he's giving them chances, and that's all they needed. And to their credit, they didn't after that Baltimore loss. Jefferson disappeared for 2 weeks, there wasn't a Stephon Diggs moment or anything. So they worked it out, and which is good. They worked it out in a way where they can win some games rather as opposed to having to trade the guy to make him happy and get the pick that it got Justin Jefferson. So I not only like these guys' talent, but I like their mentality. Yeah. And they are, they're team players. And to this point in their careers, you know, Jefferson's only in his second year, but I don't see him changing. I see him, you know, this is who he is.
Yeah, I hope we can win enough to keep him happy. That's kind of what you saw with Stephon Diggs. But we aren't going to talk about that today because he does have a slightly different mentality, I think. You would know better than I being in the locker room. But here's what I wrote on the agenda for Adam Thielen. Adam Thielen doing that amazing, crazy beep that he does. I mean, he made several catches that were, again, like you had to sit back and go, what was that? You know, the touchdown he had was a nice move after he caught it, made – dug the step in and went between two players. And then there was on one of the last two drives, he made the catch on the sideline, which the defender made a move on it, walked and went past the ball. And just all of a sudden, quickly, he makes the catch. He's got such good hands. He also had a tiptoe catch on the sidelines, a la Chris Carter. Adam Thielen is just money when the ball's around him. He's something else to watch as well.
Yeah. I mean, there it's different styles. I mean, Jefferson's more of the longer vertical guy, but you know, Thielen is the guy that, you know, sometimes you when you're watching the game back, you play it back and forth to see, you know, how does a guy like maintain his eyesight, his core, his concentration, the way he catches. And yeah, that sideline ball, that's another example, you know, that Kirk sort of got lucky there that the guy overplayed it and didn't intercept it. But that's just, you know, these are things that people are going to have to live with, you know, and Thielen comes out on the right side of this time. Now, you know, I don't slam Kirk for saying it may, you know, he's sort of living on a razor's edge when it comes to that stuff, because yeah, that could have gone the wrong way there. I think, you know, Kirk's also finding this balance between, you know, being in the fetal position and being, you know, he doesn't want to be Brett Favre. He can't be Brett Favre. And frankly, a lot of what Brett Favre did, you don't want any other quarterback in the history to do that because it was too much a lot of times.
Yeah, we remember 2009. You don't want anybody to do that. I guess I wanted to ask you about a couple times, several times in the game, and this attributes to the game plan by Clint Kubiak, but they had Jefferson and Thielen lined up on the same side, you know, kind of stacked, you know, as they would go out, and, you know, one would cut off do the shallow turn to the right or to the left, you know, to the side, I don't even know what play called, and then someone would do a deeper corner. It seemed to me that I guess I wanted to ask you, is that more good play calling or is it good play calling because they took advantage of some inexperienced defensive backs because Packers were
better? I think it's a nice design. I also think that it helps having KJ Osborne emerge on the other side, or I'm sure that he's on the other side in some of those situations where you know, say your two best guys are taken out right there, although the design is they're far enough apart where they shouldn't both be taken out in the same area, but you have KJ Osborne stepping up. Conklin's an option. But yeah, like, you know, putting him, you know, the Packers seem to me to be baffled by the fact that Jefferson was in the backfield on that one touchdown where two of the defensive backs are in the end zone with Thielen. And then Jefferson makes a cut inside and catches the ball at about the three, and there's no one there. It's just that's mind-boggling to see a guy, you know, have that type of game, and nobody is like locked on him from the minute he leaves the backfield. It's almost like, hey, oh wait, we got this guy. Well, they're both on Thielen. Well, that was an easy throw for Kirk. So yeah, the Packers in the red zone are horrendous. I mean, they just are terrible in the red zone defensively, except for one game against Washington. Other than that, that's been their one of their Achilles heels, and the Vikings have been pretty good in the red zone on offense. So that was something that definitely went in the Vikings' favor. I mean, Dalvin Cook's touchdown run. I mean, you won't see an easier 1 yard run in the NFL for a touchdown. I mean, he just goes right. Ezra Cleveland had a great block, and Darisaw had a nice block, and then Ham goes up the middle, and he just kind of walks in. So. I mean, we're so trained to see like every 1 yard run have to be like a run, a 5 minute replay to see if the ball or where's his knee, where's his ball. Well, it was kind of refreshing to see a guy just kind of walk in and throw the ball off, you know. So that red zone defense is pretty bad.
You think Zimmer should have made that challenge on whether or not Jefferson was in on the play before?
I mean, it didn't appear to me that he had a chance to win it, but you know, I don't think you can guess what the next play is going to look like, because the next play could have been a fumble and 99-yard touchdown return. So if he thought that he was in, I don't blame him for challenging. I just didn't see, you know, what angle was going to overturn that.
Right, which goes back to something we talked about last week, why there's not a goal line camera on that.
Maybe it seems like the goal line camera, and I'm not an expert on all this stuff, but it's never the right angle. It's never straight down a line or something. It's always kind of like.
Yeah, it should be. You'd think with all the money the NFL has and what have you, and these networks, but that's beside the point. I don't want to talk about that today. I'm going to ask you how the offensive line did in general, but Mason Cole specifically. He had some struggles with all Jeremy Clark. Is that his name?
Kenny Clark.
Kenny Clark.
I mean, a lot of people do it. A lot of people have struggled with Kenny Clark, which is probably one reason why Mason Cole started that game. They got the look at him instead of Bradbury in against the Chargers. They won the game. He gets a second chance against the Packers. And I mean, poor guy. I would hate to be in the film room for that first snap, because absolutely kicked his ass.
He did.
And put him on his ass. And there was a handful of those plays where he got blown up, and to the point where I'm thinking, you know, might have to have rotating centers. If Bradbury is over his COVID and he's 100%, Bradbury's my starter against the 49ers, because that game was pretty bad. There were enough bad moments in that game for Cole that I go back to my original starter. I don't know if that's what they'll do or not. Now, you know, having said that, obviously, in order to put 34 points on the board, the offensive line had to have a lot of good plays too, and especially that I thought that the protection on the where they went down and the game winning drive and different things that they did at later in the game was good. So it's not like this guy had a horrendous. I don't know what his ratings were or whatever, but there was enough moments in that game where we went, holy mackerel, that guy, you know. And that, again, that's Kenny Clark, and he does that to a lot of people. He's done it to a Garrett Bradbury as well, but maybe not to that extreme. But they got an issue at center, and your guy Wyatt Davis might be the starting center for this team next year. I don't know. I just they need some more size and better leverage in that position. Mason Cole played too many times. Was like way too high, especially playing against a powerful guy like that.
You know, I just noticed this in listening to you that you're talking about, yeah, you've been here 22 years and you're still not quite one of us. Well, I can see it because you got green and gold on your walls behind you. So maybe that's a problem, you know, to start with.
That's right. Masters colors. Masters.
Okay. All right. You touched on Dalvin Cook a little bit. I want to talk a little bit more about him. I thought his performance, which was almost 100 yards, but it was like 115 all-purpose yards because he made a couple nice grabs too, was really under the radar. He had a good game, and there was a lot of times where he met some tough resistance in the middle of the line. But then there was a number of other plays that he stretched from a minimal gain to about, you know, 6, 7, 8 yards at times and really – kept the chains moving for the Vikings on several of their big drives. So I thought, you know, I liked the way he was used. I mean, also I don't have him in fantasy football, so I don't want him to get the ball 500 times. But, you know, I thought it was, you know, maybe that's a way to keep him healthy as well and keep him refreshed as they go through. And maybe he's not. He doesn't have to carry the ball 25 to 30 times a game. So I thought it was pretty decent. What do you
think? His pass protection on the 43-yard pass to Jefferson, his blitz pickup, that's something that Adrian Peterson is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Adrian Peterson never made a block like – and Adrian Peterson's a bigger guy. He's never made a block like Dalvin made on that – on I believe it was Campbell coming up the middle. And that allowed Kirk to make that throw. So, to me, it's like, yeah, he had a quiet first half, as a runner, but that was a loud block that he made for a big play at a big moment in the game. So, yeah, I mean, he's outstanding, but he's not Superman. I mean, a good example of that first play of the game, we were talking about Mason Cole getting destroyed and knocked on it, you know, almost did a backwards somersault. He, you know, the play, and Dalvin loses a yard on that play. So, you know, he does need, he's Superman. He's a great player, but he needs a little help from his friends up front. And sometimes he did, sometimes he didn't.
Clark also got a couple fingers on his face mask too, but that wasn't called. But that's okay. We'll talk about penalties in a bit.
Oh my goodness! If you're complaining about penalties in that game, you're the leading Minnesotan if you're complaining about the three penalties that they had.
Not complaining, just mentioning, because there's been so much belly aching coming from the East this week. So anyway, the defense.
Oh, there wouldn't have been any belly aching over here, right? If they had eight penalties, or was it nine? Eight penalties for 92 yards, I think it was.
Yep, and you know they were they're the least penalized team in the league, and the Vikings are the most penalized team in the league, and they flipped
something
the
like that. Yeah,
yeah. I have no complaints. You know, they do miss a couple both ways. You know, just remember that green and gold backers. The defense was good in the first half and bad in the second. Does that have more to do with Rodgers? You know, making adjustments and figuring out and being Aaron Rodgers in the second half, or is it just the team tiring out, or what do you think about that?
Well, I think it's a little bit of everything. It's, you know, it's Aaron Rodgers. You know, Aaron Rodgers had one Friday practice in 2 weeks. So he's probably going to be a little bit rusty coming in. The pass rush was better in the first half, I think. You know, Harrison Smith had some nice blitzes that they had to use. I thought, there were stretches where, you know, seeing Sheldon Richardson out at left end was I'd like to see more of him out there, because they put him on a tight end once. I think that might have been where he got – I don't know if he got credit, but he should have gotten half a sack, half of Harrison's sack. But, yeah, it's the Packers being Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, this is not a – there's never a perfect – you know, they don't pitch perfect games in football. You just kind of like whoever – and hang on and, you know, claw and scratch the best, and just and this year seems like to win it at the end with a field goal. That's, you know, there's going to be bad, there's going to be good, there's going to be 12 men on the field like the Packers had, which is an embarrassing penalty in that situation. That's just, you know, that's an 8-win team that had some really stupid penalties, and that's just kind of how it is. It's good, it's bad, it's ugly.
Do you think Rodgers was out of sync yet another week post-COVID, because he missed three passes in the first half that, you know, a couple of them he could have had. One of them for sure could have scored, and the other two were long ones, and it just didn't look like him. In the second half, he was money, you know, with what he was doing.
Yeah, there was one to Valdez Scantling that was deep that he missed, and it's like, wow. He had time, too. And then I remember where it's going at. You know, that's not Aaron Rodgers. And I think it was three plays later, he did complete three or four plays, handful of plays, where he completed a deep ball to him. So, yeah, I mean, it's him feeling his way. It's, you know, practice isn't completely necessary, but I certainly think that for a quarterback with his timing and just everything, it is, you know, there is some value to practicing. And then where you go, you know, 2 weeks and only practice once at basically a Friday walkthrough, it's gonna make a difference.
You know, I had a fever dream when I woke up this morning. I know this is I'm sure you don't want to hear about it, but I think I had some kind of epiphanies here, a couple of them. But, you know, I watched the game back last night, and I was going to ask you again about, you know, 59 points in the last few minutes of the half for the Vikings this year. They've really struggled in that area. And, you know, when I'm watching the game, I've always wanted to blame it on the defense, but I've realized last night you can't. I mean, because right before the Packers came down and scored right before the half, the Vikings had the ball and went three and out in their worst drive of the game. And it's like, that's on you. That's incumbent upon the offense to to go in that time and take some time off so Rodgers doesn't get the damn ball again at the rest of the half. So,
Joe, I've written about that 100 times in the last 2 years. This specifically, and the five extra points that we do, I forget what they say, 59, 56, whatever it is.
Yeah,
they added 7 points to that total. But my point in that extra point was with 4:18 left, I think it was 4 minutes and 18, 4:18 left in the first half. They have 3rd and 1. Now, I like C.J. Ham. Maybe I like C.J. Ham on one of those real quick turn, fullback dives up the middle real quick. But pitching the ball to C.J., I don't usually complain about, play calling and stuff, but a pitch to C.J. Ham in that situation was dead from the minute that, the Packers started moving on him. He's not that type of player. If you're going to give it to him and you go straight up the middle. That's a 3-and-out. And the way it ended with, when you got Dalvin Cook was going the other way. And that's going to take some attention that way. But still, C.J. Ham, I just don't like him being a toss sweep to C.J. Ham. So to me, that's you're getting too cute. And do you know how much more time they could have taken off the clock? At least 2 more minutes, 2-3 minutes. And the way they're moving the ball, maybe they take out the rest of the half. But instead, they punt it, and they're leading 16-3 at that point. And I remember thinking, the defense is going to get tagged with another, why did you let them score the last 2 minutes? Well, sure enough, they get the ball with 4 minutes. They move for 2 minutes, and then now you're inside the 2 minutes. And so the stat needs a little bit of context, I think, whenever you start to say, last 2 minutes they've done this, this, and this. Well, what happened for them to get the ball in that situation? How much time did they have before the 2 minutes? And then where did they do after that? Well, I think by that time they were in Vikings territory for sure, and they score. And to me it's like, this is Aaron Rodgers, and you handed him the ball on a 3-and-out with a bad third down play call. Don't blame the defense, or at least split the blame between what happened with the offense and what happened on the defense.
You mean if I'd have just read your column, I wouldn't have had to been.
That's where that's where you had your epiphany.
Yeah, that's right. I'll make a habit of that in the future. Xavier Woods had a tough day. Why was Cam Bynum in there for 6 plays? Should we see more of him? Not that Cam Bynum is a savior, but he's played well. I think he earned a little bit more time than just 6 plays yesterday or Monday.
So. Well, yeah. And you saw a lot of – their 3 safety look that they had. I don't know if all 6 plays were – probably all 6 plays were – when they had 3 safeties and they were able to use Harrison Smith as kind of a small linebacker to blitz. And I like that look. I if Xavier Woods turns in a few more of those where he's missing, he missed one tackle in the just outside the red zone that allowed him 11 more yards to get down close to the goal line. That you can't miss that tackle. He just got run by at the end. One of the reasons that happened, and Zimmer even took some blame for it, explained it, that they're doubling Davante Adams in that situation. And I know that a safety on the receiver at that point is a tough play, but my goodness, he's given 10 yards cushion, and he got run by and made that such an easy throw for Aaron Rodgers on that 75-yard one play touchdown drive. If that's what we're going to get, if that's what the Vikings are going to get out of Xavier Woods going forward, then Cam Bynum has shown enough, I think, to get more playing time.
It's great to have Patrick Peterson back. Do you think is there more to his re-injury or whatever that injury was? He came back after he injured himself and played, I think, the rest of the game. But should we be concerned that he might be not available this week?
You have to kind of wait. If they don't practice on Friday, it's always like the one time this year they tried to say that they listed Dalvin as questionable or something, and because he didn't practice Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, no practice at all on Friday, they tried to say, questionable. Well, no, it's not. He's out. That's just kind of how it's always gone. So if he doesn't practice, and he's, but if he's limited and practices, he'll be in there. So, yeah, having him has been, you know, night and day from what he's not the all pro he was, you know, however many time all pro he was in Arizona, but he is a veteran presence that has brought a lot to this team as far as just being, he's not a shutdown corner anymore, but he's good enough that he can really make a difference on this defense, and they need him going down the stretch.
Absolutely. Well, here's the second half of my epiphany and my fever dream that I wanted to really get to you about. It centers around the final drive of the game. When I realized that the offense is culpable for some blame and those end of halves problems, you know, you're going to laugh, but, you know, I always used to, when I'd go out to the Vikings to a Winter Park or a TCO, and they'd say, or else hear them talk about the 4-minute drill. I'm going, what are they talking about, the 4-minute drill? Who the hell cares? I mean, it's the 2-minute drill in 4 minutes, but I suppose it's a different mentality. It really is important to make sure that you're watching the clock. I mean, I consider football for most of the game to be a game of checkers. I'm going to jump over you, either pass over you or run over you and take your guy out, you know, a game of attrition. But what I just realized, when you get down to the last 4 minutes, it becomes chess, and you got to start thinking all these plays ahead and really focus on the clock. The clock is a huge component of that. I mean, this is obvious, but it is. What I was thinking when they were going down there, you know, get a touchdown, because, you know, make Rodgers score a touchdown on the other. But what you're thinking is, do this, score some points, but make sure you get that clock down. I mean, did we just see the best clock management by Tim Zimmer in his tenure here? And was that play by Dalvin Cook, who didn't go into the end zone, stopped, and he said later, he goes, I wanted to score a touchdown so bad, and I didn't, and allowed Zimmer to then run the clock off. I had a guy yesterday, and we were at our Mankato brewery meeting. I just want to say his name.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, Steve.
37 minutes in. It took you 37 minutes, Joe.
He said that that's not getting enough attention. I started thinking about it, and he's exactly right. I mean, did Zimmer tell these guys to get down and not go in so that they could then do that, because they had the timeout situation in their favor? It was crazy. It was as much as I've criticized Zimmer for some of his clock management and end game decisions, that was excellent. If it was that contrived, what do you think is was that just a heady play by Dalvin Cook in the moment?
Well, I mean, they do spend the entire week talking and practicing football and going over every imaginable situation there is. So yeah, you know, Dalvin's a smart player, but I'm sure that those are things that are, you know, put into their brains as they're, you know, spending their lives practicing. I mean, we only see 3 hours of them a week, and they spend the rest of their week, you know, going through all this stuff. And was it the best clock management? I was considering that Matt LaFleur was 13-1 in the NFC and had never lost on the road in the NFC North. And you know, Zimmer's got the only two wins against him. I would say, given the where they were in their season, the fact that the Packers could have gone 4.5 up in the division, yeah, it was tremendous. It was a tremendous clock management, as good as the Cowboys was ugly. At the end of the Cowboys game, Zimmer's making a timeout, back-to-back timeouts, forgetting that he had made the timeout before, which I thought was kind of a sign of this guy might be, you know, a little spread a little too thin. Too worried about bringing his coordinators along, and maybe should have taken a crack at like letting Andre Patterson call the defense or whatever. But yeah, that to me was as good as it gets, because now you can't do that unless you got a lot of trust in your kicker. And for Zimmer to, you know, the other shoe of this, the other layer of this is the fact that Mike Zimmer did this trusting his kicker to the, you know, millionth degree. You know, he misses that. We're probably singing a different tune if Joseph misses that misses that field goal, and they end up losing. But to me, it's like it happens so quick, and it's, you know, and all the, you know, they're obviously they're running all the numbers, and for that, for them, whoever's keeping track of it, because they're at one point I was, you know, like, why aren't the Packers calling a timeout so they can get the ball back? Well, you know, then you have to figure it out, because there's an obvious reason. No matter when they called that timeout, it was going to go down to the end. So they decided to, you know, ice the kicker, and it didn't work. But yeah, that's how you manage the end of a game. That's that was really well done.
And I'm going to say, for Zimmer's sake, that it is
hot seat.
Pardon me. No, that's coming up. That's coming up. It's difficult in that pressure cooker to make those decisions. It's much easier for us to sit up here and watch the game. You in the press box, me and my couch. And I used to coach eighth grade girls basketball, which is comparable to the NFL for sure.
Yes.
And I'll tell you, at times, you know, I needed to call a timeout. I didn't want to. I didn't have anything else to say. You know, whatever you're doing, it's good. Just go do it some more and do it harder. I mean, I didn't have anything. And it's like, but you got to call a timeout to manage the clock. It's in the midst of it, it's intense. And you're not going to make the right decision every time. But that to me was heady. And I'm going to start looking at it differently from now on. I'm going to appreciate the 4 minute, 4 minute offense, and I'm going to go read Mark Craig's columns right now as we go on break.
Well, the last 2 weeks, I think didn't most of Minnesota have Zimmer? His next job was the eighth grade girls basketball coach.
Yes, that's true. All right, we will we'll check with our sponsors on that.
All I know is he is ruining the 2022 draft. Absolutely ruining it by winning these last two games.
And you're ruining my agenda.
He should be fired for ruining the draft next year.
We'll hit that when we come back. And we're back at VikingsTerritory.com. No, VikingsTerritory.com and Vikings Territory Breakdown. And Mark is busy helping Zim with his resume while we were away. So now we're back here and we're talking about it. And, you know, you gave me some grief this week on Twitter about if we're going to have a question about the hot seat. And I had another as I was laying in bed thinking, how am I going to get Mark Craig? But I thought about the same thing, that they're not going to fire him during the season. The potential still is there at the end of the season. And I want to ask the question to you this way. What does he have to do to not get fired at the season's over? Does he have to get to the playoffs? Does he have to make a deep run? Does he have to win the Super Bowl? I mean, what measure do you judge him by? Because not just because I think he's going to get fired, but there's plenty of people that are listening to this broadcast that think either want it or think it's going to happen. What do you think?
Well, I mean, there's so many variables. Well, okay, here's a scenario for you. You say they got to make the playoffs, or they got to like win a playoff game. Kirk Cousins gets hurt in the 49ers game, and Sean Mannion finishes out the year. Do you still hold him to that standard that he has to make the playoffs?
No,
I don't know. I would say if you know, this league is so much about, it's unless you're got a Hall of Fame quarterback or you're in the top 1% of the league, it's basically scratch. Like I told you, it's scratch out 9 wins, hope you get hot, and hope your roster isn't decimated in January, and see where it takes you. I mean, the Giants and Steelers and different teams have won doing that, you know, like scratching out 10 wins and winning their last 6 and getting hot. The Packers did that 1 year. You know, that's just kind of how it is. I do think that if they stay healthy as they are now, and they miss the playoffs, he's, you know, he's still in trouble. To me, it's like you wait till you get to the end, you analyze how they got to wherever they got to, and then figure it out. If, you know, there's like when I talked to him before this season, and I sort of agree with him. He said like early in last year when they totally blew the attempt to like let all their veterans leave and replace them with rookies, you know, playing at corner. He said they got a few games in there, like, you know, he and Andre Patterson were like, you know, if we win 8 games with this is going to be a great coaching job. And you know, that was true because they had no off season to practice. They had all these young guys, first year players. It was a bad miscalculation on everyone's part to do that. And then to have the pandemic on top of it made it 100 times worse. But, you know, I could see a situation where you win at San Francisco, you're 6-5, and you lose in Detroit. So it's like, and that, but believe me, if they were to lose in Detroit, and they even though they're only 6-6, say they're 6-6 at that point, that then 6-6 is going to feel different than 5-5 feels right now. People are going to want to fire him. So it's like, you know, this roller coaster, sort of that, like that game was on Sunday. That was a roller coaster through the entire game. Well, this season's a roller coaster. And I still say you wait to the end and figure it out at the end and see how, you know, see how they do. My gut feeling is that if they're healthy, they got to make the playoffs for him to survive.
What they just have to make the playoffs if they're healthy.
That's a total guess. I mean, it all depends on how you get there. If you go, say you make the playoffs and you get blown out by the Packers 34-0 in the first round of playoffs. Yeah, you know, who knows? I mean, there was a year where Marty Schottenheimer went 14-2 with the Chargers, lost his first game against the Patriots, first round playoff game, and he got fired. So a lot of stuff behind the scenes. There's a lot of stuff. Just the situation, the context matters. It's not just raw numbers that to say a guy's got to do this or a guy has to do that.
But, you know, you've been doing this for 19 years here, and I don't know how many your entire career watching NFL. How many?
Well, it's definitely, I don't know, 100. Was the league's 101 years old?
But you've been watching. My point is.
Right. The impatience has. I mean, they're not teams are not paid unless you're Pittsburgh, or you win six Super Bowls like Belichick. You know, teams are pretty impatient. Now that the Wilfs have proven since they fired Childress in the middle of the season, they've been pretty darn patient. I think, but Zimmer's also given them some reason to keep him by winning. Making the playoffs every other year. I think that the target or the goal should be not to make it just every other year, to have something a little more consistent. And we're at that tipping point now of can they do it? Because depending on what Kirk does, I mean, who knows what the financial situation with Kirk and what that does to your cap and everything. But say they make the playoffs, say they make a good run, you know, you keep Kirk as your quarterback. And then how does that work with Zimmer? And they're at the point where this could be the start of something longer term, or it could be blow it up. So that's what makes this season so exciting, I think, is, you know, you're 5-5, you got 7 left, and anything, literally anything can happen with this team right now.
Well, then we would be negligent if we didn't ask the question each week. As a 5-5 team, they had expectations to being further along at this part, and very well could have.
But did they? I mean, everyone had that brutal stretch. I mean, everyone had them losing to or beating Cincinnati. Got to beat Cincinnati. Everybody had them. You got to beat Arizona. They're not even the best team in their division. You know, they're going to finish fourth in the NFC West. Well, they got the best record in football now. Seattle, can't beat Seattle. There, it's a loss there. Well, that's their only time that they relaxed and beat a team by more than one score, or had a more than one score game. So, yeah, and then they had a brutal stretch where they did not win. But now it's like, on the flip side of that, it's like going to Detroit. You know, pencil that in or write that down in pen. No, they almost lost to him at home. So, we got to see how it plays out.
I think at the next press conference that you're at with Zim, you should ask him if he's playing checkers or chess and see how that goes over.
Checkers or chess?
Yeah.
I'll ask him, do you think you're on the hot seat? Joe Oberle wants to know.
Everybody that's listening does. I'm a Zimmer Bobo. You know, this year more than others, I've sat back and tried to be more critical of him and look at him more objectively and say, you know, because I've always enjoyed talking with him. I've always enjoyed seeing how he handles his players and the way he treats some media people. I'd like to see it. I really like to see it work out for him, because my biggest thing in this discussion has always been, I don't want to make that decision until I know what that decision is going to be. You know, why blow it up and then look around and let's see, who should I get?
There's no reason to. There's no reason to. And the where I've defended him is, to me, it's like the cold, hard facts are going to decide. It's not whether what I feel or what I think or whatever. But when people say that he had lost the locker room and they were 3-5, I just didn't buy it, because they were playing too hard. And then certainly when they went to Los Angeles and won and did what they did to Herbert and that prolific offense, you know, you don't do that stuff if you've lost the locker room and they're all, you know, wanting Zim fired. That's just can't do it.
Would you say this is one of the discussion I was having with my brother last night. He was saying that he didn't think Zimmer was that good of a tactician. And I, you know, because he blitzed on the Marquez touchdown, the long 75-yarder, and left, you know, legitimately, my brother's right, left the secondary open. But, you know, blitzes are a gamble. Blitzes are going to pay off. Sometimes they're going to get home. Sometimes they're not. And I think he is a good tactician. But over and away from that point, given what we were already talking about, Aaron Rodgers lost the game right there on that play, didn't he? Aaron Rodgers lost the game on that play because, as the rest of it turned out, Aaron Rodgers should have and would have had, you know, he probably was looking to make a 20-yard gain, you know, run off some clock, you know, dink and dunk down the field and then tie it up and then beat him in overtime. But instead, he scored too quickly for Kirk Cousins. He left too much time.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a – What bizarre world are we in when we're talking about Aaron Rodgers leaving too much time for Kirk? Right. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers got Aaron Rodgers. And you know, hats off to Zimmer, you know, like willing to take a, you know, trust his kicker, who I'm sure he was a little nervous about, even though it was a short kick. I mean, this is was outdoors, it was cold, but I seem to remember a 27-yard field goal getting missed here. A couple years back. Yep. So for him to like, and then to come out and for the perfect summary was, I felt the best way for us to win this game was with him standing on the sideline, and it worked out perfectly. So yeah, it's like 75-yard touchdown. Maybe he should have like fell down at the 10 or something.
But you know, think about it. He actually really did. You know, I mean, we got to enjoy as Vikings fans, the sad, whiny face of that knucklehead from the East as they kept showing Rodgers as the time was ticking away. And you could see what's his name, LaFleur, just goes, I got a timeout and I don't have any time left. You know, it was just fun because we've seen those things with the cameras pointed at our players how many times.
Well, it was and it's got to feel good for the people in the stands, because, you know, there's a lot of Packer fans there. And there were just like there were a lot of Cowboy fans in the crowd. US Bank is a great home advantage, but there are fans that find their way in.
They got to pay for those. And, they sell them to pay for the rest of their tickets, their season tickets. It drives me nuts, but you know, they've done it for forever on here. I hate it. I wanted to ask you. I wanted to say, you know, the Vikings are currently 5-5 in the sixth seed, and they actually control their own destiny for the playoffs. But their margins razor thin. And you've already said, you've already predicted maybe for the next 2 weeks a win in San Francisco and a loss.
No, God, no. No, 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 no.
So what do you think? I'm kidding. What do you think of their chances going forward to make the playoffs? They look good right now, but, you know, this is the NFL. It changes every week.
Well, I think very good. If they were in the AFC, they wouldn't. I mean, like the AFC is – I don't have it in front of me, but there's, you know, teams that are 500 or above that are, you know, 2 and 3 spots out, and the Vikings are 5-5 and they have the sixth spot. This is, it's a big, they're all big games. I mean, I look forward to Wednesday going in and hearing the, is it Kirk? Is this a big game? You know, Kirk Cousins has played here for 57. I think he just passed the midway point. I saw somewhere where he's now played either equal or one more game as a Viking compared to Washington.
Oh, really?
So,
wow.
And I think all 57 games he's played, he's gotten the question: is this week a big week? And he's answered it the same way. But you know, the 49ers are in the NFC. They're 5-5. They've won two in a row. The Vikings are in the NFC. They're 5-5. They've won two in a row. And you know, it's as impressive as that win over the Packers was. 49ers had an equally impressive 31-10 win over the Rams 2 weeks ago. Yeah. So this is a huge game when it comes for NFC playoff positioning. And you know, it's not, I don't see the Packers like giving up that 2.5 game lead, but you know, it would have been 4.5 and it would have been over. So there's a little bit of the pressure's on them, you know, and they're playing a Rams team that's coming off a bye. You know, if I'm them, I'm hoping that it's nice and cold in Green Bay on Sunday for the Rams coming in. But, I like their chances now, but it's sort of like I always laugh because like, you get these emails like some groups will put out like these analytical groups will put out like the percentage of a team can make the playoffs. And after a loss, that percentage goes down. After a win, that percentage goes up. And they find a way of like making it sound fancy, but that's just the way. Yeah. Yeah. If you win, your chances increase. If you lose, they go down. But I like where they're at. I like how they're playing. Injuries obviously will have a lot to say about who makes the playoffs, but yeah, I would say right now they're a playoff team.
After two big wins, typical in this area and this team and this franchise is to have a letdown. And that's my concern. You know, they've not typically in the past year, Zimmer's teams going to San Francisco have not done well. So it's going to be a tough game. But, you know, the 49ers themselves are pretty schizophrenic. They've been up and down, you know.
Extremely. More than the Vikings.
Yes. And, you know, their quarterback situations sometimes unsettled. Garoppolo was hurt for a while, and they had Trey Lance in there, and there's probably people calling for him. And thankfully, nobody's calling for Kellen Mond back here. But what do you think? What do you think about their offense against the Vikings defense, San Francisco?
I mean, it's an interesting offense in the fact that like Deebo Samuel is second in the league in receiving yards, and last week he has one catch for 15 yards, but he had 8 carries for 79 yards and a touchdown. So he's kind of this, DJ Wonham put it Monday, he's a receiver in a running back's body. So I guess maybe like a Percy Harvin. I don't know if they're the same type of player, but, you know, that's an offense. It's, you know, they're like the Vikings, but even more so. There's a lot of fullback, a lot of tight end. They got a great tight end. You know, the quarterback is okay. I mean, there's a reason that they drafted. A lot of it has to do with durability, but they drafted a quarterback 3rd overall. I think the Vikings, you know, can handle it. You know, but a lot of times with the Vikings, it's if you can't handle it, when they start to wobble or they start to crack, it's because the run defense is let down. But, you know, the way Eric Kendricks is playing, I've been impressed with the defensive line has really held together. Better than I thought they would. Maybe you get Michael. I don't know when Michael Pierce can come back, but they kind of need him back. You know, they need to get what they paid for with him. But yeah, they can stop them. But you're right. I mean, the 49ers, they won their first two games, and they lost their next 4 games, and now they've won 3 of 4. So not quite sure which 49ers team we're talking about when it comes to, you know, who are we going to see. But I think that, you know, the Vikings have the defense that can play with them.
What about on the other side of the ball? The 49ers defense is 6th in total yards allowed, 3rd in passing yards allowed, and 20 in rushing. Perhaps it's more Dalvin than just in time production next week. Huh?
Well, they better not stray from your just in time productions.
Right.
They'll get back to where they were when they were in Baltimore and Dallas and some of the earlier games. You know, that Bosa definitely looks like he's back. You know, from the ACL. He's got, I think, 10 or 12, 11 sacks, something like that. He's a guy to be concerned about.
Yep.
But, I mean, I don't think the Vikings offense right now has to take a backseat to anybody. If they can piece it together on the front, they have the weapons and the confidence in a quarterback and the arm ability of the quarterback and his targets that, you know, they can – they just don't have to fear anyone, I don't think. And if they play the way they played the last couple of weeks and somehow avoid turning the ball over, which they've been – they're kind of ripe. They're kind of due for some turnovers here, which maybe why Kirk is wanting to talk, at least talk about dialing it back a little. Mm-hmm. No, I think they think the Vikings can go in there and score some points.
You got a prediction?
It's one of those like you're chasing. Whenever you miss one week, then you kind of do you like predict them to come back down to earth, or you predict them to keep the momentum going? The way they're playing, their confidence, the fact that they just went out to California and won against a really good team, the inconsistencies of the 49ers. I mean, the 49ers are capable of blowing them out or getting blown out. I'm going to stick with the Vikings playing, you know, as well as they have the last 2 weeks and winning a close game. I don't know if it'll be kind of in the 20s, I think.
I've lived here all my life and been a fan as all that time as well. So I'm really concerned about a letdown after these two big games, you know, because these guys are human and that it's tough in this league. It's what makes this league as topsy turvy as it is from one week to the next is human beings that get in a car wreck on Sunday afternoon have to rebound both physically and emotionally by the next weekend. So I'm concerned about it, but I think. After all the turmoil and angst and just anxiety that this team has had to go through with losing all those close games, I think they're going to go out there with some confidence and they're going to, you know, maybe they have a new way of looking at this offense and they can, surprise the 49ers with the new look Minnesota Vikings. So,
I've already told you, Joe. The letdown isn't this week. Letdown's next week.
Yeah, but you wouldn't go on the record with me. So.
Boy, would that be a letdown, huh?
I'm going to pick the Vikings in another nail biter. It's going to be fun, and soon they're going to flex every damn game the Vikings have because they're such fun to watch. But
that's right.
On that note, we'll take another quick break, and we'll be back to talk about some headlines from the NFL this week with Mark Craig from the Star Tribune. Okay, we're back at Vikings Territory Breakdown. Mark, our NFL insider, we usually start talking about the Packers at this point. That's what I like to do because they're the most important team, no matter what. I mean, as far as Vikings are concerned, no matter what anybody else says. And you know damn well Rodgers looks forward to having horns with Zimmer more than he cares about going and whooping up on Chicago, which he owns them. So anyway, did they seem less superior now? What happened to that great defense we heard about coming in? They were number three coming in, and how do you see them rebounding? They the way they got their stuff together in the second half on offense, they look pretty damn good.
I think they're still the better, you know, they're I would still take them if they were to play again tomorrow or to play a playoff game, but they're beatable. That was proven. Thank goodness I don't do like the 1 through 32 power rankings every week. I try and you could not put my own thing. I don't care what other people how they rank their teams. You'd always get like you'd get emails saying, "Well, you ranked the team there here, and these three other places ranked them over there." Well, then read those other places. I don't care. But it's like I always had a rule that for at least 1 week, if a team beat another team, they could not rank lower than that team. So can you imagine? I mean, it was hard every year, but this year that would mean that I'd have to rank the Texans above the Titans and find a way to put them. Where do I put the Texans? So my power rankings always look kind of goofy because – I would like this week the Vikings would have to be above the Packers and like right. You'd have this year, I would have like all these teams with 4 wins up here and teams with 8 wins down here for different stretches, because I was like, you know, this is a snapshot of the season, not the full. Took the kind of the opposite approach, the snapshot of this week. Well, I'm glad I don't do that now, because it would just be a jumbled mess. Because, but so you know, I got the Vikings. I think 14th. I got them. You know, they're right now they're in the 5th or 6th playoff seed in the NFC. I got them behind 5 NFC teams, including the Packers. But it's kind of good to be 6th. I only have 5 ahead of you. You've beaten one of them, and then 2 other ones, Arizona and the Cowboys. You played and lost to by a total of 5 points. So, you know, the Vikings are, yeah, you could say this about almost, I'd say maybe 20 teams in the league. Anybody, if they get into the playoffs, could beat anybody anywhere, because we're not seeing as much of a home field advantage as you typically see in the NFL. So not only are teams more even, but they're not dominating at home.
It is. For anybody that has that job, it's got to be nuts. You know, I've always felt the same way. If you just beat a team and all of a sudden you're ranked Diloma, is, you know, but it all depends on how they're doing it. If they're doing a snapshot of the moment, the team in general for the whole thing. And it's, you know, I told you this morning, I saw the Vikings with the NFL Network's power rankings at number 10. So I thought theirs was a little high and yours was a little low. So I'm thinking somewhere in between them. 12th, but I don't have to do that. So I won't. Going to the rest of the topsy-turvy league, the Bills got torched by Indy, and their quarterback, Josh Allen, had 3 turnovers, 2 interceptions and a fumble, I believe. Do you think Diggsy wants out and wants to trade back to Minnesota?
I will be one of my I'm not going to watch the Lions and Bears. I might watch the Lions Bears just kind of in a stupor as I'm taking naps, but that second game with, you know,
they're the 3rd game. Bills play at night.
Yeah, 3rd game. So, 3rd game, I can't watch that because I watch Christmas Vacation. So, my point is, if they lose, if they keep losing, because right now the Bills to me are shaping up as they're becoming the most disappointing team in the league right now, because there's too much talent there to be looking up at the Patriots right now. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because I think you mentioned earlier that about Diggs' wins and losses is what sent him out here. More to do with that, because they made the playoffs with that the year that he wanted out. It had a lot to do with Diggs wanting Diggs to get catches. Right. So
and their quarterback turned it over 3 times. That's why I brought that. It's got to be just Josh Allen now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's gonna be interesting to see. I still think Buffalo is capable of winning the AFC East, but my number one team for this week is the Patriots, because of just how well coached they are. They've won a league high 5 in a row. All 5 of those wins for Belichick has come against first or second year coaches. So we're seeing the Patriots get coached pretty well this year, I think.
And so
I wasn't a big fan when he was in Cleveland. Let's put it that way. But I wasn't a big fan when I covered him. I respect the guy that can coach like he can. And you know, for them to do this with the rookie quarterback who's the 5th guy taken, it's pretty impressive.
It really is. I remember at the beginning of the year, I thought, okay, finally, this team is gonna, you know, step back. They didn't do great last year, and they got a rookie quarterback coming in. I said, okay, finally the Patriots are just not going to be the Patriots, and I was going to have to see that and see how Big Bill handles it, you know, because anybody that wins that much, you always get a little jealous of him. So he's not. He's doing a hell of a – he's probably going to win Coach of the Year if he wins that division and makes any kind of noise in the playoffs. And right now he's looking like he can. The defense is playing great. They blanked Matt Ryan, and everybody was talking about Matt Ryan and the Falcons before that happened, right? You know, it's amazing.
Yeah, they absolutely destroyed the Browns. I mean, it wasn't even a contest. In fact, to the point where Myles Garrett has to be talked to by Stefanski, because he's going out complaining about, you know, basically we got out coached, and I'm sure that didn't sit well with the Browns coaching staff. But he, in a lot of cases, he was right. I mean, they just they were no contest, and they're a good team, but just what they weren't a contest for the Patriots.
I think I would have, if I was Stefanski, I would say, "Do you see who's coaching on the other side? Come on!"
Hey, he's a reigning coach of the year, though. Come on.
God damn. Well, that's a good point. What you mentioned? What happened to the Titans? They can't handle life at the top. Wow.
Well, I don't know if you noticed, but their gigantic running back got hurt 3 weeks ago. I'm more amazed that they
played well since then.
That's what I'm saying. I'm more amazed that they beat the Rams and I forget who else after losing him than I am the fact that they can't. Well, I shouldn't say that because of who they lost to. Right. In fact, in my picks, I put in that they're due to lose. Every ounce of my being says they're going to lose, but they're playing the Texans and they're going to win. Well, they overcame that with it was a bad weather day. A lot of turnovers. I think Tannehill threw four interceptions, but still, wow, to lose. I mean, almost any other team, I would have picked them to lose because it was time for them to lose. But to lose to the Texans, that's a horrendous loss. And now they're going to play the Patriots. So,
no one knows more about the difficulty in losing Henry. My fantasy team has lost. First place fantasy team has lost two of the last three since Derrick Henry went down. So, but nobody cares about my fantasy team. What's up with Philly? Are they they play in the NFC East, so they're going to win some ball games here. Are they going to be a concern in the playoff race for a wild card spot, you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like them as much as I would like the Vikings or even the 49ers. I don't know. I mean, that's a hard team. They're one of a number of teams it's hard to, like, figure out. You know, I think it starts with, you know, not having that established quarterback and kind of wondering where he's going to end up in his early career here. I don't know. I mean, I'm not on board with the Eagles, but they proved me wrong when I picked the Lions to upset them. I think it was 44-0 whenever I gave up on my upset special pick, the Lions over Philly.
There was a battle between the two teams that have gone 0-16, the Lions and Cleveland last week. It almost went to the Lions. What's going on with Cleveland?
Well, I think Baker Mayfield's hurt, and he's not, you know, he's not an elite quarterback. He's good enough. He's certainly better than what Cleveland's had for 20 years. But, you know, I just don't think that they're and they've had some injuries too. The running back, their running game hasn't been at full strength. The Lions are a desperate team to win. You know, as the Vikings are going to find out, especially if they don't win against the Bears. I mean, I just would not want to be playing the Lions right now, knowing that there's just that fight to win a game, and they played the AFC North. They tied the Steelers. They almost beat the Ravens. They almost beat the Browns. So they're just a team. It's just what you want to stay away from right now.
The Chiefs are ascending. And even though the Bucs won last night, they're still a good team, but they don't have the luster that they had last year. I mean, those are the two teams that were in the Super Bowl last year. And there's always a hangover, and the Chiefs had theirs early, but they seem to be on the move. Their defense is playing better. And Brady is, from time to time, looks 44 years old. Is he 44? Is that right?
Yeah.
So what do you think of those two teams before we go?
Well, to me, it's if you're you know, being called, you lack the luster or whatever, and you're still got seven wins.
Yeah,
you know, that's a sign of a good team. And like Belichick's teams always are better at the end of the year than they are in the beginning of the year. The Chiefs are just playing like the Chiefs should play offensively. What got the Chiefs in trouble was they got a horrible defense and they started turning the ball over, you know, every other play. The Chiefs need to be almost perfect on offense and hope their defense, you know, hops along for the ride. They're probably the best team right now, but I picked the Patriots just for more consistency at this point. But knowing this league, it'll be, you know, someone different next week.
Yeah. Well, that's about does it for this week. I did want to leave with a new segment I'm calling the best tweet of the week. And this came from Viking Central, who does some work for our network. And I thought it was great. He said, Kirk Cousins and Justin Jefferson didn't even have to buy Packers stock to own them. That's so true. It's so true. So I have to take one more parting shot at the Packers. I do want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving and everybody else out there that's doing the same. And thanks again, Mark, for another week of chatter. I'll be crafting my Zimmer hot seat question all week.
Week. And I just gotta say, if any Packer fans out there, they could maybe email me, explain to me, how do you buy a $300 for that stock? But in order to get a little piece of paper, I think you had to pay $50 more to get it to put it on your wall. How in the world do you buy that and not feel like the biggest dupe in the world?
Well, that's all I got. A lot of them might have got some COVID money from the government or something.
You know? You're paying for a piece of paper that's of no value, so you can put it on your wall. And I mean, that's fine if you got the money to do it. That's great. But there's someone out there. There's a rich organization out there that knows you're going to be a dupe, and they put it in front of you, and you gobbled it up. I don't get it.
Gobbled it up. You said it. Happy Thanksgiving, brother. Thanks to all our sponsors, and we'll be back next week. I have to talk about the 49ers and Vikings at Vikings game. So enjoy your Thanksgiving and skull.